Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Islanders country, hello. This is the Eyes on Isles podcast, powered by the Fansided Sports Network. I am your host, Joe Bono. Follow me on Twitter at IslesFix and subscribe to our Monday through Friday Islanders newsletter. And I'm joined here once again by our full-time recurring guest, the man who raises his level of sniffs come the postseason, Mr. Andy Francis. Andy, a lot to unpack here tonight.
Yep. How are you currently feeling?
I'm feeling about as good about their outlook for the remainder of the series and heading home to Long Island as you possibly can, given what transpired a few minutes ago before we started this and obviously happened in game one, because I thought they were the better team for really large portions of this game and have certainly been the better team 5-on-5, but obviously huge missed opportunity here, and not just about the Mayfield missed call, not just about an overtime. There were some other missed opportunities in this game as well to put it away.
Yeah, I think I might have to downgrade Carolina to the seventh best team in the East, because they are so devoid of upper tier talent, something that I know Islanders fans always clamor for. But when you take a look at the Islanders' top six, there's two legitimate scoring threat of scoring coming from two lines. And when you're looking over there at Carolina, they struggle to generate chances. They are a lackluster team from top to bottom offensively. They just have to hope to strangle you to death, and they weren't even able to do that tonight. They conceded two goals in a matter of whatever, 5 minutes. They blew a two-goal lead, something that's very unlike them, but something that was very unlike our Vezina caliber goaltender was the
we can go there. We can go there to start. I mean, I know we're going to obviously get to the missed call, but you know, you look at the goals.
That's already late. That's already in overtime.
No, I understand. I mean, the first goal, obviously, the position of the shot is not one where you're expecting goals to score, but it looked like it, you know, tipped off Stastny's stick. He may not even known, or it was trying for a deflection. Those things kind of happen. Obviously, the fluke goal on the Aho batting the puck out of midair. People getting all crazy about Aho batting the puck out of midair, as if, listen, should he have not done it? I guess it's an instinctive play. Sorokin did not see the puck until very, very late. It's a fluke goal, but it's a horrible goal to give up.
What do you mean? They've never played hockey a day in their life. There's no different than somebody throwing a dump in, and it hits the stanchion in the boards and comes towards the goalie. He just literally, it doesn't matter if it, what's the difference if the guy went to fire it in and it hit the inside of Aho's shin and then redirected back towards the net? That's from the blue line. You can yawn a full time for 3 seconds and still have time to adjust to that puck. That is more abysmal than the last one that came from behind the goal line, because at least you said, well, he saw Sorokin's head was poking out, which it shouldn't have been, poor positioning, but at least that is a play known about. The bank off the back of the head if the goalie sticks his head out a little too far. And some guy, like 1 out of 10, 1 out of 20, 1 out of 30 can pull that off, but Sorokin, you can't lean your head. I don't know what he was doing, this joust where he was trying to punch his blocker out, anticipating the crossing pass. You have to hug the post and not allow that much of the back of your head to be exposed, because he was literally a foot behind the goal line. It's the only way he can score from there. And unfortunately, you need your best player to be your best player. He is the Islanders' best player. And those two debacles lost the game, unfortunately. And all those other stuff, yes, I get it. The disparity in penalties, the missed high stick. Your best player had a chance. Like, the Islanders were up 6-7 minutes left. They're supposed to be a good defensive team. They defaulted to defense the second half of the year. Carolina is bad when it, in terms of coming back, they're 5-on-5, and we just let them come back. That is the devastating part of that loss to me.
No, I'm with you, because when Nelson scores the goal and the way that they had been playing in the third period, and really since they went down 2-0 and Palmieri got them back on the backhander and kind of lit a spark, and obviously Barzal scores with 20 seconds left and you're feeling great going into third. It's pretty even there to start, but the Islanders, I think, were had the better of the play. And then to break through, and for Nelson to break through, given the opportunity he had, he just doesn't miss. I know he won the accuracy competition back at All-Star Weekend. Extremely accurate shooter. You just had a great feeling when he had the puck in that position. And you're thinking they're going to put this game away right now for the reasons you just mentioned, because of Sorokin, because of the limited quality chances, high danger chances that they were allowing 5-on-5, that if they just stayed out of the box, did not give them a power play, they had a great chance to get a victory. And instead, to give up a goal the way they did in that position with Slavin, below the goal line, and him knocking it off his mask was absolutely brutal. They killed a big penalty late in the third. The penalty kill was great tonight. I know they technically got a first. They technically got a power play goal on the Aho own goal. The Islander penalty kill showed up, and I know they didn't get a power play, but Joe Pantorno from AM New York, tweeted out actually just a little bit. He went back, or I'm not sure how quickly he was able to do this, but only 4 times in NHL playoff history has one team had 5 power play opportunities while the other ones had none. Happened twice in 2017, happened in the first round of game 5 in Columbus and Tampa, and then happened tonight. So yeah, it does not happen. Huge disparity. We get it. And then it's the exclamation point, the punctuation point of this with the Mayfield missed high stick call. But it's not the reason why the Islanders lost the game.
Yeah, the game should have been over. They should have been in the locker room at that point. They should have closed it down. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, I'm really hard on Marc-Andre Fleury. I really believe he screwed the Las Vegas Golden Knights. During his Vezina year, they were about to take a 2-1 lead in the series. He fumbled the puck behind the net with 1 minute left, and it just squirted out to an open Montreal Canadian. They were the overwhelming favorites in that series. They're about to go up 2-1. That series is over, as you saw when Tampa went in there and beat them. But they scored that. A true freebie, won in overtime, ended up winning the series. I don't care that Fleury won the Vezina. He screwed them out of that game, which ended up screwing them in that series. This game was won. You can't have that happen. I'm sorry. Like, you can't. You can't, especially when you're the team's best player. And that, to me, is what I keep thinking about. But, before this game, I was thinking about how all results, good, bad, whatever, they were irrelevant, because as I was watching the other games last night, and you're watching Tampa and Toronto's power play, and you're watching the Rangers, these playoff series, and the further you go, it's even more so the point. They're decided by special teams. They really are. And the Islanders had a chance to win game one as well. 0-for-4 on the power play, and then gave up the two power play goals to Carolina, who had the second worst power play in the NHL. So when a special teams debacle in game one, a goaltending debacle in game two, it's lemony snickets, a series of unfortunate events. But Carolina is so bad, in my opinion, from what I've seen, they can still win this series. I have a hard time finding ways right that Carolina can win two more. Bad goaltending, lack of depth. They were, I don't even know who I could say they rely on. The yeah, one guy Teravine, that's doing everything.
Lost Teravine in broken hand, so he's probably out for the series now.
The one guy I'm actually worried about, because he's always doing things out there, is Brett Burns. Not even yeah. Aho. Mm-hmm. Aho is that exact guy that you think he is. Under a top-tier talent. He's like what Brock Nelson is to ours. Extremely reliable, gets a chance, he'll score. But we're not talking about Connor McDavid out there or Nathan McKinnon.
You're not scared every time he's on the ice. When Aho's on the ice and he has the puck, you're not frightened that he's going to all of a sudden, either create something that's going to have a scoring chance. Doesn't mean he can't convert when given an opportunity. He certainly can. But yeah, it's not that level of fear. They don't have that player. They don't.
Yeah.
Their formula is, even in this version of the Carolina Hurricanes that has limped towards the Metropolitan Division title here in the regular season, is to get a lead and be that stymie defense and be really strong in the neutral zone and not give up much and kind of, you know, camouflage the fact that you don't have better than average goaltending. They did that very well in game one. And it was fantastic to see, down 2-0 after the Islanders could not generate anything after they got back in the game on the Pulak goal that was a goal that was gifted to them, the way they came back. And then the way they played even strength the rest of the way, and the way they didn't let the momentum of not being on the power play and having to kill these penalties, and they got right back at it, and all four lines had their moments. So it's really strange. There was a lot of positives that came out of this game. There really is. That's why I said down 2-0, a brutal overtime loss where you blow a third period lead, and I did not expect to be optimistic at all down 2-0. And there's a tinge of optimism that if they win game three at home, that's going to be, you know, multiple games in a row where they've been the better team, maybe all three at even strength, and you see what happens. So I'm not here tonight saying the series is over, even though down 2-0, even though they got to win 4 out of 5 against a team that they've now lost 5 consecutive games to this season. They have never beaten in the postseason. They've lost all 6 games now to Carolina. I don't know why, but there's a tinge of optimism that I did not expect to be there. Given the situation.
Yeah, there's a tinge of optimism that you did not expect to be there, and that's called me screaming for these Carolina Hurricanes these last couple weeks of the season. And I just want you to understand, because we did end up with this spot, this is exactly why I was as devastated as I was when they lost that game to Washington, because I knew how vulnerable this team was. And you're seeing it. They're down 2-0, and I really am in my head. I'm like, okay, well, how are they going to win these? They're literally going to try to win these games 1-0 these next two games. Hope to get a point, shot from the point through from Burns or something, get a crusty rebound, and shut the lines down, but they won't have the benefit of last change at home once it goes to Long Island, and you'll have the Islanders' top line getting better looks, even though they already converted in this game and were playing better to begin with. So you got to think the Islanders have a very good chance. I will tell you this. It's definitely going to make my sniffs. Game 3.
Little sniff preview here.
And you can... I have zero biases. I had a policy that I implemented with the Canes last year. When they're at home, I'm betting on them. We're on the road, I'm not. I don't care. When I lose, I'll lose. But at that point, you've won so much. And we won all 7 games in the first round. And then we won the first 6 in the second round and then lost that game 7 with the Rangers. At that point, you know, you tip your cap and say, thanks for the money. I'm going to pick the Islanders 2 nights from now. And I'm going to give everybody in the country who watches this, random people in Norway and stuff who take my bets, they don't watch a minute of hockey. And they're going to be betting on a team called the New York Islanders 2 nights from now because that's what I'm going to suggest that they do. Oh, there are some people who don't watch a minute of this stuff.
Yeah, you know, I think... the way this game ended, too, you know, will give some extra juice at the start of the game, I think, for the players and also the fans. I wrote in the newsletter this morning that, you know, a split is the difference between the building being really loud and the roof feeling like it's going to blow off. And I think the kind of anger and angst around the no call to Mayfield will carry over into game 3. Now, listen, things can happen pretty quickly and that could evaporate, but the Islanders will have an opportunity with that place going crazy on a Friday night to jump out to them an early lead, and they can play with the lead against a team that has all those shortcomings offensively right now. And, you know, you get it to 2-1. I think you're going to feel okay about their chances. And then, you know, you get 2 shots potentially if you're able to hold serve like the Rangers did last year to potentially knock them off 1 game at home where you should have the better goaltender in all those games. Tinge of optimism. That's what I'm going to say.
As there should be. The one thing I will say about Carolina on the road, they don't even try to flow their offense like they do at home. They truly try to play like that one game that you saw early against us this year, that shutout where they just wanted to give up nothing, score
yeah, against,
1 or 2
the fisherman debut.
Goals.
That was the fisherman
yes,
debut game
fisherman
in December,
debut.
Yeah.
They play ultra-conservative, and those Ranger games you're alluding to, the Rangers' power play connected in all of them.
Yeah.
All of them. Multiple goal power play goals, and Carolina couldn't catch up. We, weirdly enough, are going to have to do it 5-on-5, which is not going to be easy. This people will point to those Ranger games. I remember them vividly, very vividly, because that was a big sniffer series. it was because every game. And I remember that first game. I'm like, all right, Carolina just won the first 2. we're going to say Rangers. But in my head, I was thinking, all right, well, how are they going to do this? You know, they had game one and they lost game two. They couldn't really score. Getting away from that top line, I bet you that helps. But really, it was that power play that really started the Rangers on the run that they went on. So we're not going to have that to rely on, obviously. And
yeah, and I would like to have seen.
We should touch on that.
I don't know why I would have liked to have seen what adjustments they would have made, because they've been trying to make adjustments on the power play now for 6 months. So, but obviously no opportunity tonight to see anything they worked on or emphasized, given the way Carolina very aggressively tries to kill the penalties. Apparently made some adjustments on the penalty kill that worked really, really nice despite the 1-for-6. It really was probably an 0-for-6 if you want to count it in terms of what they did on the penalty kill tonight. I mean, just it's obvious just watching the games how aggressive the penalty kill is for Carolina. I mean, they jump on them, and things the Islanders do not do well is move the puck and move it quickly and decisively, and it looked like a recipe for a disaster. And remember, that first power play that they saw in game one, they got 4 shots on goal on that first power play, and you were like, wow, Barzal's really a difference maker on this unit. And then the next three, they did not get a single shot the entire time. No. And that one late in the third period, they could not even gain the zone. So would have liked to have seen what they were thinking they were going to do differently. I know Lane Lambert called their play stubborn in terms of trying to carry the puck across the blue line. So I guess we could have expected that. Well, I'm sure maybe we'll see that in game three.
Yeah, we will. And it really is discouraging. I saw you're a stats guy, but you might have to dig this one up. But the playoff power play percentage as a whole is very high. Like I saw, it's like,
oh yeah. I mean, I'm watching the games last night, and you're watching the Ranger Devil game. They're scoring power play goals. I know the Devils didn't make much of their opportunities, but the Rangers are scoring goals in that game. You're flipping back over to Tampa and Toronto, yeah. Power play goals. Nylander scores
two for Dallas, one for yeah. Minnesota. These teams are just raking in power play goals. And I mean, this is something that we like casually dismiss things like, yeah, well, we have the last ranked power play, but now like, well, it's like that shark under a surfboard. Like, yeah, that big shadowy substance under our surfboard. That's not a shark. Like, it's not a shark. No, just keep going. Let's keep surfing. These warts are going to show themselves at the worst possible time. That's the main culprit of the game one loss. And if they get through this series, and you play a team like the New York Rangers, well, we know what their power play is doing. So if they're blasting in power play goals, we're putting in none. Think about the massive disadvantage you're already starting at.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you want to look at a potential future bright side, a few days or a week from now would be, hey, you don't have to worry about Ranger fans at UBS Arena partying it up like they were at the Prudential Center on Tuesday night.
It's even worse. could
avoid that. You watch basketball, you watch some baseball, you know, you root against the Rangers, and that'll be how it goes. But
do you guys understand what the scam metro bracket means? The Devils look like skinny high school kids plucked to play in a men's league. And then we have this Canes team who struggles scoring at home ice. They're struggling beating the Islanders. And then you have the Islanders who can't score a power play life to save their lives. And then on the other half of this bracket, you have last year's President's winners, President's Trophy winner. You have this year's President's Trophy winner. You have the 3-time Eastern Conference champ, 2-time Cup champs, and one of the favorites to win the Cup in Toronto. And we're sitting down here doing this. And now we just got rid of Teravainen and injured up Stahl. We're just going to send them limping to the Rangers, who already were waxing them with a full roster. This is a tough night here.
Tough night. I didn't get a chance to watch really anything of the Boston-Florida game, but obviously Florida scored 6 goals, pick up a win, a split in Boston, who did not have Bergeron again here tonight. So, you know, maybe that series becomes a lot more interesting than people thought. Obviously, we saw what happened between Toronto and Tampa, just a complete coming apart type of game one for Toronto. I'm not sure how much that carries over to game two, and there's injuries now on the blue line, especially for Tampa. That could certainly make things a lot more complicated, but it's about as bad of a game one, 3-0, 3-2, major penalty, boom, boom, coach's challenge, you know, 5-on-3, just brutal. And I love the Dubas sightings.
It was as bad of a game one as Tampa had in their last year when they lost 5-0. So I would say use that for some optimism. I actually believe that the Leafs are going to win that series, and nobody was I had to scream to the heavens to tell people to stop dismissing Tampa before last playoff started. They were like the fourth favorite in the East because I knew the way they play come playoff time, but they just stripped away too many pieces to the Cadillac. And I think, yes, they had a great game one. Even if those two defensemen were in the lineup, I would still take Toronto, and I never would, but let's just call it a sniff, if nothing else.
If nothing else, right? Listen, okay, let's spend a little bit more time on some other themes from this game. Let's just a moment here, or maybe more than a moment, where the anger is going to be on the no call, and it's because of what happened earlier in the game with the Aho penalty, where the play is continuing, it stops, they check him out, he's bloodied, goes to a double minor. Thomas Hickey said during the post game that he was like, don't quote me on it, but I think the rule is that the linesman has the ability to stop to reevaluate the play if there's a potential double minor or major, but not until the play is over. And that play the whistle never came. So, you know, on the video, the linesman is obviously right there looking at it. He may not have been in a position to stop the play, you know, right there as it was happening. The ref is kind of coming around. Obviously missed it. Don't know what the positioning was. The other ref, it was an awful miss. I mean, Martinuk he's flailing his stick, completely out of control.
Yep.
It's as bad as you can. And you can see the pundits at the national, you know, media level on social media all basically saying the same thing, that this was just as bad as it gets in terms of a no call. So people are going to be angry about it. I think Mayfield was attending to medical attention, so he was unable to meet with the media. You know, whether or not he lost his head there in the moments following that and that impacted the next play, I'm not sure. He was kind of on the right side. They kind of were too much, both him and the other defenseman there, that kind of allowed that passing lane over to Foss for the goal.
Oh, and also the slowest back checker known to man. And like that was Anders Lee guy coming down the whole ice.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't keep up with him because, unfortunately, that's not Anders Lee thing.
And I was going to bring up Lee, but also just that line. I mean, Barzal, obviously a lot of encouraging signs. Just to see him on the ice doing most of the Matthew Barzal type things was a big boost. And then he felt good. He played over 20 minutes in game one. He scored a goal is the type of goal we always want him to try to score, where he's this, you know, he comes down with speed, shoots the puck, has a better shot than he gives himself credit for, scores a huge goal. That was big for him personally, confidence-wise, I'm sure. Huge boost for the team. Bo Horvat, I want to be the biggest Bo Horvat fan out there, right? We all defended him, the intangibles, the face-offs that he won, team player, two-way hockey, helping out shorthanded, being more physical, cementing the Islanders down the middle while Barzal was out. All of that's true. This guy's got to score some goals, and he's not even getting opportunities, Andy. Like, there's not even a moment in these games, the last two, where you're going, oh, what an opportunity for Horvat. He had the one pass that was too in tight to lead that he couldn't convert in the first period of game one.
Yeah.
Tonight, he had nothing. There was nothing there.
So what I will say is the Pastrnak, Marchand, and Bergeron line, the best playoff line I've pretty much seen in 15 years. When they played them last year, they got nothing every single game in Carolina. They would come home and score a whole bunch of goals. Then they'd go back to Carolina, do nothing. Just that five-man, because they're also putting Slavin out there against them. So I'm not making excuses. I'm surprised they were able to get one. I would have said, oh, they're just not going to score every single game. That's just the way Carolina plays at home. But they got chances last game. I mean, it was a nice setup from Horvat to find Barzal in that mini breakaway. It was one of the few good chances that they had. And then in this game, they were able to get a goal. I believe Horvat set that one up, right? He dropped it off to Barzal.
No, I think it was Pelech. Pelech came through the neutral zone with it. I think he intercepted a pass and handed it off.
And then he got – okay, yeah. So there was that. Now let's see – I remember I haven't been defending Horvat or Badge. I just kind of
I've been defending him, I think. And
I've been waiting
to
see. Let these next two games where they're gonna be able to get away from that line. Let's see if they're able to produce like those Bruins players did last year when they were able to get away from them.
They're going to have to. I mean, he's going to have to.
Stahl is 100%. I mean,
he's not even winning all the faceoffs anymore. You know, it was one thing he was winning all the faceoffs. He hasn't been, I don't know what the exact percentage was, but he's been losing some big faceoffs in these first two games as well. So listen, we know what that Stahl line is capable of. We know that he's become that type of shutdown player at this point in his career. He's done a really good job against other players. You know, on the road, do you do something different with them? If they don't show this chemistry that you were hoping they were going to rekindle, do you do something different to kind of break them up and play them both at center positions? Is that possible? Maybe. I don't know. Just to get one of them off of the Stahl line against it. I guess it's something that Lambert could do if nothing.
No, I mean, on the road, it's got to be the Palmieri-Nelson line. That's simply what it is. It's like you put them out there. Fine. You want to take away the Barzal line? This is like what it used to be when we played the Bruins on the road. That the Nelson and Beauvillier line and Bailey, they would come up with multiple goals in those road games many times in a series like that. And we saw that. Palmieri scored, Nelson scored, and they were able to get opportunities because they were able to get those better matchups. And now next game, I mean, look, that's what it's got to be. You have to have multiple lines that can contribute. I mean, the good thing that Barzal is back, and at least he's able to draw that attention so that we have that second line that's able to score. And if they score two goals in road games, trust me when I tell you, that's a win.
Yeah, no, without question. And, you know, just to kind of go back before we take a break, to, you know, our theme at the start, and I'm sure a lot of people that are tuning in were like, wow, they're going to start talking about how Ilya Sorokin, you know, did not win this game for the Islanders and not the Mayfield. You get into this game and into the series in that was the clear edge you had in the matchups. Every single preview, but they have Ilya Sorokin. And he played solid. He played well enough in game one that if you got more of those type of performances, you should be winning games with those type of performances. And you know what? If he would have given that type of game one performance in game two, you'd be even right now. And it just wasn't there. And I guess the weird part about it is like how to evaluate kind of these fluky type goals against the ones that are just the bad goals where he gets beaten. Like you look at the last goal and he's kind of very deep in his own net on that one. It was a good shot, and he was, you know, he got pretty close. It was wide open ice, you know, when he got to the puck. Foss was able to get pretty close on him, and it was a good shot, I grant it, but his positioning was not great on that goal either. And then obviously the one goals two and three, like we talked about, both fluke in nature, but both avoidable.
I said this many times, and it's just Islander fans, they just refuse. It's like their son or something. Like, oh, my son never does anything, but you're crazy to think. How can anybody not like him? Like Jerry Seinfeld's mom. His positioning is lackluster. It's Jonathan Quick-esque. He relies on reflexes way more than being well-positioned, and it costs him on multiple occasions. That's why on two-on-ones, you see corners get picked. He plays small. And yes, he makes acrobatic saves, this, that, and the other, but in terms of goaltending positioning, Steve Valiquette's camp that he's always bringing up on that damn show or whatever – like, he's not hugging the post properly. He's exposing too much of the net and the back of his head. Then coming across, he's leaving too much of the net. Sometimes he's too deep in the crease. Like, these are multiple issues here. And I get it. He makes the big, you know, split across the save. Oh, my God, he took away the bottom of the net. Well, the playoffs is a lot more crusty than that. There's usually a lot of chaos going on, and you have to be able to hold your position in the midst of that chaos. It was one of my favorite things about Lundqvist, how he never just threw himself out of position. You know, it's kind of reminds me of Fleury. I saw Fleury push off before, try to make a save. He was literally a full 3 feet out of the net by the time his sprawling, you know, save attempt was made. And there's just a chaotic element to that. And I know how good he is, and I understand that. But in these 2-2 games or a 3-2 lead, it has to be closed. It can't be, no, but it was a great shot by Slater. No, it wasn't. He was behind the goal line. It's a lucky-ass back-of-the-head shot that has a 0% chance of succeeding if your head is positioned differently. So I hate to say it. Every game is a series of events, but he's one on the list. Okay, they call the penalty. You want to know what they're going to do? Nothing, just like they've done on all the other penalties. Like, you want all these penalty calls, but then you yell, keep this 5-on-5 because we're doing well. You know, it's...
And it's hard to say that it directly led to the goal. They had possession. The puck came back out to the neutral zone, transitional play. So it wasn't like, you know, he stayed down and the puck stayed in the zone and they never got possession back. You know, it's... I think the thing is that for the team to overcome everything that they overcame in this game, and for your goaltender to be the one that slips up, and he's your best player by far, and expected to be your best player in the postseason, and the reason why you can compete with Carolina and potentially other teams, is really disappointing. It just really is.
Joe, that is very well said. Like, so much to the point, I might try to cut this clip and send it to you, and I'll let you decide, because you're going to have to deal with orcs from Lord of the Rings for saying such a thing.
Is out there.
But that is the 100% truth.
I'll write about it tomorrow.
100% truth. If everybody's going to stare at Bo Horvat and scream at him to score, then you also should stare at your other star and scream at him to save. It can't happen. Not in the playoffs. Not in a game of this magnitude to tie the series at one.
And we know the Islanders' margin of error is, you know, in any series they're going to play is going to be small. Like, how the Islanders are not the team that can give away a game that they're supposed to win. Now, I know we have that tinge of optimism that I keep on going back to. And, you know, my recent memory, 21 years ago at this point, you know, they were down 2-0 and against Toronto. They won. That was a home series. And ultimately, you know, the last game, they lose a one goal game on game 7. You know, you sign up for game 7 right now. So we'll see what happens. We've watched, you and I have watched, you know, we're in late 30s, early 40s. We've watched these Islander teams split games 1 and 2 on the road and not win another game, yeah. You know, yeah. And come back. Oh, you come back to the Coliseum, that crowd, the barn's going to be rocking, lose. We've seen that too. So you don't know how these series are going to transpire. There's some recent history with Carolina not being able to play well on the road.
Yeah, but
in,
dude,
two straight series, and the Islanders have been a very good home team this year.
Yeah, but yeah, Joe, throw out those previous series. Those series are all of that optimism stems from who they're playing. This is a unique circumstance.
I get you.
This isn't Toronto of 2001, 2002 with Matt Sundin and McGillney and to multiple lines and they're killing. If this was the Rangers, if this was next round, if we do get out of this round, and then we just blew a game like that, a winnable game to the Rangers,
yeah,
the series over. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. This all has to do with our opponent, a.k.a. anybody who had any sort of thing to say about the scam bracket. Well, you can thank me now, because the only reason you believe you have life is because you witnessed the scam yourself out there. You've seen our opponent. You know they're beatable. They got no goalie. They have no depth, and they are extremely vulnerable. So much to the point, I'm trying to think, how is Carolina going to win another two? They're going to – if the Isles do what they are supposed to do out there, and everybody just kind of does their job, these games are all winnable, because it's not even like to the Rangers where they can play a bad game and then just rip in 2 power play goals, 3 power play goals. They have an abysmal power play. I mean, they have so few good things going for them right now. I mean, if they can't beat them, it's like, all right, well, who can you beat at this point?
Right.
Well, hold on. If you could trade series right now, if you can just play Florida for the rest of this series.
There's maybe no one else you'd want to be playing. Yeah.
Nobody. Yeah. Would you rather play Winnipeg or the Kraken? No, we're playing the worst team in the playoffs right now. And go ahead, click it and fucking, or maybe the Devils are the worst, actually, with the children they're rolling out there trying to play roller hockey.
They might not have enough time to even grow some playoff beards, some of those guys. They might not even own a razor.
Oh man, everybody's relearning a hard lesson. Even if they come out and win the next game
with his wife, he went to the game. He wore the alternate jersey that has, you know, jersey on it, the black one. Like, his wife got him one for like a birthday gift, and it had like Jack Hughes. He's like, I'm sitting at this game, they're getting crushed, and I'm wearing, you know, the sweater as a 40-year-old man of it, like 19-year-old right now, like. I'm embarrassed for myself.
That's interesting you mentioned that. I will not wear a jersey of somebody younger than me.
Oh, same. I've said that too. I think, yeah, I won't do that either. I think I'm done with putting anyone's name on there. Like, I had some retired players, maybe Mike Piazza back 1999, 2000. That might have been my last name. I think Michael Pekka was probably the last Islander jersey with a name on it. But
my mom pulled the trick on me, though. Before Christmas, like 3 years ago, I was sitting on the couch. And I got to give her credit. She's usually, oh my God, the worst actress in the game. But I was just watching an Isles game, and she goes, "Who's the best player on the Islanders?" And I gave her the, like, you know, most people like think it's like Matt Barzal, but honestly, if you're talking to somebody who kind of really sees what's going on, I know this is going to sound weird, but I said it's Devon Taves, the defenseman, number 20.
Of course.
They go, "Oh, he's your favorite player?" I said, "Yeah, for me, this is the first guy I've been excited about in a long time." And she bought me his jersey. That was actually a test to see who I like the
most. Got the spelling right. Probably spoke with your brother. Made sure she got all the details right.
Yeah. Well, and done, you want to hear the funny part of that? My younger brother didn't know that that's what she was doing. And like, who's your favorite? He goes, C-17. Yeah, Matt Martin. And she had no clue he was kidding. So she bought him the Matt Martin jersey.
Well, he's got longer use out of that jersey than you did Devon Taves, sadly enough. I was actually watching an interview with the Quinnipiac head coach. He was doing an interview on the Split and Chicklet show. I saw a preview of it, a little snippet of it on social media. And like, he had the framed Devon Taves, jersey in the background. I was thinking of you. Anyway, let's take a break. When we come back, I got to talk to you about my dilemma on Friday night, and I need some advice. You're listening to the Eyes on Isles podcast, powered by the Fansided Sports Network. Joe Bono and Andy Francis will be right back.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're back, Joe Bono and Andy Francis, Eyes on Isles podcast, Fansided Sports Network. So Friday night, first home game in UBS Arena history. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, I think the way this game two ended with the Mayfield no call, it should be a angry, feisty, liquored up Islanders fan base there on Friday night.
You can say it.
I'm not using your word.
I'll use it, and this is when I'm proud to have them. The carnies will be out. They will
this
be
is
out,
we need
and they
them.
Are angry. This is you guys are mistaking that for an insult. We need the carnies. We need batteries. do not take that serious. Do not bring batteries. But I'm just saying, go ahead, take out your frustrations on the crowd. Wear something insulting the Whalers or something like that. Whatever it may be, go ahead, let it rip.
So I won't be there at the game on Friday night, and my dilemma is that plans were made weeks and weeks and weeks ago. Plans were made. Dinner with the neighbors, 7 o'clock.
No.
Reservation.
No, I don't care. Like, whatever. You have to always weigh, all right, well, what's the downside? Your wife will be probably pissed for X amount of time.
So this is where I got to give you the history. There's some history here for me personally, okay? 2003, so this is 20 years ago, probably close to the date, right? I have a girlfriend in college, lovely girl, happily married, a couple of kids, great for her. And we had on the calendar that we were going to go visit her dad's uncle, who was a big sports fan. He would never met me. He was excited to meet me, another sports fan, you know, talk baseball, talk football, everything else. So we met the uncle, and then we had dinner plans afterwards. This coincided with Islanders, Ottawa Senators game two, Islanders coming off a 3-0 Garth Snow shutout in game one.
Yeah.
So this is smartphones, so there is no checking your phone for the score. There is no streaming the game underneath the table. This is 20-year-old you know, Joe stuffing a Discman AM FM, you know, radio in the side of his pants, trying to get the seat furthest to the left by the wall at the restaurant and trying to listen to the broadcast during the uncle dinner. Did not go over well. Islanders lost that game. I was a little perturbed, a little angry about that. It was not my personable, relatable, you know, jovial self. And, you know, we didn't make it to senior year together. So I have to be very careful about how to handle the situation. Listen, there is no getting out of this. It's going to happen.
That's a defeatist mindset.
I'm not. There's no way I'm getting out of I'm not getting out of the dinner. I'm going to be at the dinner. Question is, what time I'm going to get back? Because this is like, you know, big parents night out.
That is a defeatist mindset. That is unacceptable. Like, there are people where they just they put that in their head. Well, I have to go. Okay. Like the first thing as you're telling this story, I have 9 ideas going through my head. Okay. Different restaurant, make sure there's TVs located, but like multiple things going on through my head opposed to can't watch the game. No, go to a place where there's going to be TVs lining, come up with a good excuse as to why. And now
you're in my phase of life right now, you have to put things on calendars. It's a lot of work and a lot of moving pieces to even make yourself available to go out. So these things are planned weeks and weeks in advance. People write them down in a planner next to the karate classes and the dance recitals and
stop doing this. I'm trying to make my life more serious. I really am. I'm really trying
as I look at all the noses in the background right now.
Yeah, you're looking looking at the $1 million belt, perpetual noses, Street Fighter II, but a guy who's going to be able to watch the Islanders and a guy who made his sniffs. You want to know if the sniffs wouldn't be anywhere? If I had to go to the karate class and then my neighbor said I got to go to the, and I'm not saying not to do that. All I'm saying is you ain't marketing it in such a way where I'm going to really hurry it up and get there, because you don't see your friends. You can't go to games. You can't watch the playoffs. And I understand there's nothing more fulfilling in life from everybody who says it than seeing your kids and watching them grow up and doing all the things that come along with being a great dad. And I don't doubt that at all. That seems very great.
It is. It
seems like it's something that supersedes everything. With that said, all the trickle downs seem miserable outside of that. The peripherals seem miserable. And this, you ain't helping.
This is unfortunate. The timing of it is unfortunate. I mean, when your teams are good and you're playing postseason in April, May, and June, potentially, like, stuff comes up. The weekends get busy. There's weddings. I mean, as it my May right now, every weekend there's something. You tell me, is that going to be a Saturday or Sunday Islander playoff game potentially if they made it to the next round in any of those Mays? Of course there's going to be. So there are challenges. Now, the way I'm going to handle this, I'm not going to do a repeat of 20 years ago. I'm not going to try to sneak it from happening and be aloof. I'm going to announce at the start. They know I'm a big Islander fan. They even purchased the book, and they don't even really care about hockey, just supportive neighbors. How about that? I'm just going to announce early on to say, hey, listen, Islanders are playing tonight. I'm going to be periodically checking what's going on. Hopefully we get home in time, you know, for the third period. Because I don't think we'll be out too late. And that's what I got to do. That's how it's going to work out for me. And I'm just being honest about it to you and the audience, et cetera. Just life. That's life. This is 40.
I want to tell you something. This is why I don't like your neighbors already. And this
they're
is
wonderful
why
people.
This is why. Oh, they might be. They might be. But this is why people, once they get to know me, they're like, I honestly, that might be the best effing quality about that guy. If I ever learned that something like that, like if I saw that you hosted a New York Islanders podcast and I knew they had a game, do you know how awful I would feel to be the reason you're not watching that? If you ever made that announcement at a table, because somebody who knows you, they should know that already. Like, that's what I don't get people's mind. If you, Joe, said, hey, I got this new book out, and I saw New York Islanders on it, I'd
go,
oh,
think they
well,
even
this guy,
know that they might not even know that there's a playoff
But that's
game
what I'm
Friday.
Saying. Is everybody just someone who doesn't realize they're going slow in the left lane? There has to be coherent individuals around. If I knew anything was semi-important to somebody, I would never be the reason. I would never
be the
reason.
But this is not a situation where, like, I have the Islanders schedule, and I know, like, what dates to avoid and what dates
I'm okay. 100%.
Like,
I'm putting it on them. Any normal person realizes someone can't foresee the playoffs.
Make plans, put three kids down, get the babysitter, get the grandparents, get everything arranged, and then go, uh-oh, game three at UBS Arena. Call it off.
Yes. Yes, because that is what you've been waiting for years. You haven't been waiting for dinner for years. You haven't been waiting to get the fish tacos at God knows where you're going. There are a finite amount of opportunities you're going to get for something like this. As somebody
now
who
listen,
had to wait.
I'll say this. I'll make an exception, and maybe this will save me some face with you, right? Like, if I had tickets to the game or were offered tickets to the game, I would go to the game. Like, if it was like, listen, we have to cancel dinner. I'm going to the game. That's not what's here. It's like, okay, like a period and a half, maybe two periods. You got to track some other way, and then you get it home and you settle in for the final, 20 minutes.
I don't look. I'm not blaming you so much as those around you. I just can't. Like, the only thing that would be in my head. If I ever saw, this is just how my mind works. If I ever saw you half glance at your phone, I'd be like, this is torture. Why are we doing this to this guy? Anybody who's ever wanted to check lotto numbers or watch The Weakest Link or watch Monday Night Raw or just do anything that they've been waiting for, how could anybody else ever be on board with taking somebody out of that?
I guess, it's like, okay, well, that's game three. And then, like, there'll be something at 1 o'clock on Sunday that I'll make sure that there's just a lot of stuff going on in this serious life that I have that you have maybe thinking about entertaining at some point. There's other stuff going on. It's not as easy. It's not easy, man. It's hard. Like, I'm lucky.
It,
my kids aren't old enough right now where it'd have been like, hey, I'm going to be at a recital. Oh, I got a soccer game. I got their trophy award presentation, all that kind of stuff.
I guess that's
1989,
why I'm upset.
1989, Giants-Rams playoff game. I think my dad, came to this, nothing participation award soccer, ceremony for me and missed the Giants losing in overtime on a Flipper Anderson touchdown from Jim Everett. But nevertheless, he was there.
I guess that's why I'm upset, though, because I do understand that. Family does supersede. Random dinner with the chalk neighbors does not. Oh, hi, Dan. Are you ready for dinner this Sunday? Like, this guy you don't give two rat's asses about in the
that's
long
not
run.
True.
If you,
that's
if
not
you
true.
Moved away, if you moved and got a job in Philadelphia, you would talk to this guy max one time the rest of your whole life. That's how important this guy. Your kids, of course. Even if it's a kid's game, a dance, I fully understand. That's something that's always going to be remembered. You and Dan talking about the Dow Jones, it pales in comparison. You going there on tax deadline day.
We might, the market might come up, inflation, the weather. It's a lot of things we have. What have you been watching?
I know.
Did you watch The Crown?
I'm only giving
yet?
You a hard time.
You see what happened on Six? Did you happen to see what's on Succession?
Yeah.
I'm going to talk a lot about the Full Swing documentary on Netflix. He's a big golfer. That's where I think that's my opening. I'm going to start with that.
Yeah. You know it's going to be great when he. Did you see Game 2 of the Yankees? Well, that was a real.
God. Oh man. Anyway, I'm looking forward to dinner, and I want a nice dinner. I want to have a fun evening, and then get home quick, 20 minutes, settle in. Islander victory overall. That'll be a win-win, an Islander win, and that great night. Everyone will be happy.
Yeah, everyone who watches the game will definitely be happy. I mean, you're going to feel like a guy who didn't get to go out on Halloween. Yeah, the candy's there, but you missed out on the whole experience.
Again, I think if I had a ticket, different, but anyway.
You hear that, crowd? You hear that, crowd? If he had a ticket.
That's the part I'm going to have to DVR the game to like see the opening, you know, like, yeah. Or maybe like the MSG Twitter account will like, you know, put out something and Brendan Burke will write this like, you know, 2-paragraph soliloquy to start the game that gets your, you know, goosebumps going, and I'll have to like watch it in bed at 11:30. But anyway, other thing I wanted to just mention besides my my dilemma, just a random thing that I was listening in the car on the way to work today between Boomer and Gio, and I just want to make sure that you and I are on the same wavelength here. They started, and it's kind of ridiculous even talking about this. It's a hypothetical that they were like talking about the Devils and Prudential Center, and you know, Gio mentioned, hey, if they won a Stanley Cup at while playing at Prudential Center, you know, would they have the parade at the parking, like in the parking lot again, or do they have it downtown Newark? You know, where would the Devil Parade be? And then that became a segue into if the Islanders won, Gio was like, oh, well, they'll be down the Canyon of Heroes. And Boomer was like, no way. There's no chance the Islanders are going to be down the Canyon of Heroes. And Jack Gregg was adamant about it. I know the Islanders have made an effort to try to be this Long Island team, but, you know, kind of flirt a little bit with the city in Manhattan a little bit. What do you think would happen? What would ownership want?
I would say that if they remained in Brooklyn, I could see some sort of understanding to try to continue to affiliate yourself with the city. But mark my words, I told you it's one of the best reasons that you can be an Islander fan. One of the most alluring parts of being an Islanders fan is that it's you and 10 people next to Chuck E. Cheese on Hempstead Turnpike. You have to go by a place called Taste of Honey to get to the original Nassau Coliseum. And if you told somebody from the middle of the country that you're an Islanders fan, they think you're talking about a Hawaiian baseball team. They are an obscure team. They're the least popular of all the New York pro sports teams. And that's the best part about it. It would be a handful of us on Hempstead Turnpike, stretching from ANS Bagels past Hofstra. It honestly, the best thing to do is to go from Coliseum to Coliseum. You go from the new place to the old place.
That's what some people did recommend that today on Twitter. You know, that's where the route would start, and then they would end at UBS Arena somehow. I don't feel bad saying it. Like, the Canyon of Heroes, like, we have visions of what the Yankee Parade looked like and what the New York Giant Parade looked like. What kind of crap? just being honest, if we had the parade down the Canyon of Heroes, like, how many rows of people deep would that be down Sixth Avenue? You know, when are they going to get the key to the city that they don't play for? I just don't understand. He was so sure of it, Giannotti, who prides himself, you know, puts himself out there as an Islander fan amongst the teams. He'll wear any jersey, obviously, for the right reasons, for the right
I think they would feel the energy. Like, you know, they casually see what's going on. Didn't they change the Islanders buzzer that they tried introducing game one? Like, you know, when they score
the
goal.
Oh, the siren, yeah. Yeah, like Tinelli and Macchio. Yeah.
And then they tweeted out, like, Islanders fans, we heard you loud and clear. If Islanders fans made it be known that they were disgusted by like being affiliated with like the Yankees and like just the other chalk New York teams, then I think they would do it. And I got news for you. Do you think the New York Islanders like spending money? Which one do you think is a cheaper one to do?
Someone else pays for that, right? Someone else pays for all that, I think.
Yeah, trust me. When they're weighing stopping New York City and shutting down major streets, shutting down productions, you can't film season 12 of NCIS because the New York Islanders are in town.
Can you imagine? Hey, I can't get down Sixth Avenue. What's going on? Oh, it's Hudson Fashing on the Cadillac.
It's that Hawaiian baseball team. They're in town.
Hey, who's that? Oh, that's Varley. That's Sorokin and Varley are up there. Along with Lou.
You don't know who that is? Hudson Fashing. That's a good one. Yeah, you don't know who that is? Thomas Hickey.
Hey, it's the MSG flow with Shannon and Thomas Hickey. But listen, there would be no time. Like, they would make those decisions, what, 2-3 days after a cup win? So, like, they wouldn't be able to reverse course, I don't think. I would say it would be so perfect Islander fan base to win a Stanley Cup and then people be furious over, like, where the parade route is going to be. Like, that would just be absolutely perfect that people would be like, what is this?
Yeah,
100%. They would put out the tweet, you know, kind of like the Mets did on that patch, the Presbyterian Hospital patch that everyone hated. You know, they put out the tweet, "Hey, we're proud to announce this is our parade route," and everyone just goes crazy on it.
How they rebelled against everything Brooklyn. Like, yeah. they hated, they blamed that original Hurricane series on Brooklyn, right. The one from a couple years back. Yeah, they don't like those affiliations. You know, there's people in Ronkonkoma watching these Islanders. They don't want to be trekking it to Manhattan. But I think if you say, "Oh, it's like, you know, outside the original Coliseum, and your old initials are still engraved in the champ's bathroom," then yeah, that's more alluring and that's more their speed.
Yeah. So I agree too. I think maybe again, we're dreaming here, hypothetical. I would think, you know, could Belmont Park, now it would happen around the same, if they won a Stanley Cup, it happened right around the same time as the actual stakes race. But could, like, Belmont Park accommodate, like, a celebratory just day where, like, people are just out in the park and, like, having a party all day long, and then they do, like, a ceremony out in the grandstand, you know, where they have the seating out, maybe something like that. That would be cool because you have the arena right there in the shadows and kind of have everyone just kind of, that'd be kind of a good mix given like the tailgate culture.
And hey, Joe.
Kind of, yeah.
I got good news.
It's not going to happen this year.
We got time to figure it out. That's all I'm going
to
say.
And then they'll be like, "Joe, you going to the parade?" I'm like, "Actually, you know what? Me and Dan, we got these plans together."
Yeah. Me and Dan are about to shoot another 18 out in Portchester.
Made these plans. It's been on the books for a while. Yeah. So anyway, good conversation, and we'll see what happens. You know, the season could be over Sunday around 3:30, or we could be really excited about what's to come in the series, and they send it back to Carolina tied or have their backs up against the wall down 3-1. Could go in a bunch of different ways, but I think as way Andy and I have both articulated tonight, there's reason to believe, despite being down 2-0, the first two games, as much as about the Islanders, it's also about Carolina, and there's reason to have that tinge of optimism that they can dig themselves out of this and at least give themselves an opportunity to get even and then maybe steal one on the road before the series is done.
Yeah, they really can. So you got to do it one at a time. You can't do the mail-it-in Islanders, can't be the worry-about-it-tomorrow Islanders, but they have won those home games. You're going to have to win one on the road, because even if they win two at home, they can't start feeling themselves like when they won game four against Tampa and then just decided, "Well, we don't have to show up game five."
Yeah, 8-0.
It's something that I always worry about with these guys, man, just the random flat games. It's so funny. It's like almost, you remember when Willie Mays Hayes opened his eyes to see if he got cut when he looked into the locker in Major League? Do you remember that?
Yeah, with the pig slip, yeah.
He literally, and then he slowly opens that one eye. That's my process of seeing if the Islanders show, like, which version did we get tonight? The ones who care or the mail-it-in Islanders? And I still don't know if they came to play game one. It was just such a weird game,
weird vibe.
But tonight,
yeah,
they seem to do it.
They played a really good game. I mean, you know, high sticks, two double minors where they draw blood, fluky goals. They played a pretty strong game overall.
And anybody who ever had the audacity to say, "Oh my God, that turnover during the, oh my God, that stupid penalty," Scott Mayfield is built for the playoffs. You haven't said his name once because he is what playoffs are all about. I told you, you got to drag those players to the playoffs because that's where you're going to see them shine. You've seen it with Mayfield. Now let's see if that fourth line can generate ruckus at home, where they tend to usually do their best work when they can feed off of the crowd. But they've been hitting everything that moves over there.
They have been, especially tonight. The bigger disparity.
So you drag those guys along simply for playoffs, and you're seeing, as I like to say, the fruits of that sniff being rewarded. And Scott Mayfield, any slanderers realize this is why you just deal with when he just kind of makes silly plays throughout the course of the year. He is rock steady in front of the net. He's a nightmare to deal with, and he is built for the playoffs.
And big contract year coming up for Scott Mayfield, but we'll leave that, of course, to another podcast. Well, Andy, I got some optimism. You're giving the sniffs to the Islanders for Game 3, letting that be known right here, right now. That's where you're going to be going. And we will see what happens. And I'll be right there with everybody else, checking to see what's going on at the UBS Arena from my phone. Hopefully they got good cell phone reception at the restaurant.
Oh, God. Hey, call imagine. Ahead of time. Let me help you out. Like, you do two things. You do it two by the book, and you don't think ahead. I'm a multiple. I live life like a pool player, man. I'm thinking nine steps ahead. Well, what's the service there? Should I call ahead of time? Should I get the Wi-Fi so I don't have to fake a bathroom visit and ask the waiter for
it?
That's what I'm doing. I would literally call ahead of time, say, listen, I have a reservation on Friday, and I'm just going to need Wi-Fi service just because it's work-related stuff, and then tell them your name for the reservation.
Yeah, because I don't They'll think there's going to be – I don't think there's TVs. This place is fringe too fancy for a sports game to be on. But at least I could track it from my phone, right? Because 20 years
Bougie
ago,
Buono.
20 years ago, it was AM FM Discman or another thing I used to do 20 years ago. I used to call this number called 555, like tell me. It was like 1-888-555 tell me or something like that. And you would call up and you'd be like, good evening. He goes, and I'd be like, the Mets. And he goes, the Mets lost a tough one to the Braves 3-2. Oh, like, it would be like, that's how you would get the scores. You have to keep on calling back to see what the scores were. That was our lives like 2 decades ago. It's crazy.
That's Bougie Buono only going to places that are so nice. They don't even have a TV over there. Oh, my God.
All right. Well, listen. You guys can tell us, put in the reviews, tweet at us, you know, what would you do if you were me? I'm sure everyone would agree with Andy.
Don't sell yourself short.
Maybe a few of you might agree with me. Afraid of your wives.
Oh, my God. I'm telling you, Joe, you just scared them. Whoever's in their early 20s listening to this, you're just sending them deeper into different territories.
Dude, it's like, what do you want? Like, where do you want to go the rest of the week? It's a long weekend. If you want to cancel those plans. All right. This episode of the Eyes on Isles podcast. We'll be back with you next week. We'll see whether or not we still have a series to talk about, where the Islanders will be. But everyone that's going to the arena, be loud, be proud, be excited. I'm looking forward to at least watching all of the Sunday game. Certainly the third period of the game on Friday night. So for Mr. Andy Francis, I am Joe Bono. We will talk to you next time, Islanders Country. Good night.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.